You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Randy Rollison. Randy, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Randy, today we're going to talk about intersection for the art. And so let's begin with that. You're talking to me from San Francisco. Tell me a little bit about what it means to be executive director of Intersection for the Arts. I'd like to talk about its mission and goals and projects, but first, tell me a little bit about exactly what it is for the listeners.
Well, it's Intersection is kind of a legendary organization in San Francisco. It's been through many life cycles. It's been around since 1965. And being the executive director at this time is really kind of a wonderful culmination of my journey as an arts leader, and being able to work with all these, young startup organizations, mature organizations, helping organizations that are maybe have seen their day and they neither need to reinvent or dissolve. But it's really just incredibly rewarding work at this point in my career, which is about being of service to the field. So each day has a lot of variety. It's just so wonderful to be able to support artists who are doing like really, really important work in their communities and helping them to realize their project goals.
So let's talk about some of those projects and their goals. Of course, we're in the context of the pandemic. We're talking on April 21st in 2020. So what are the projects you're involved with right now? Because it seems that so many organizations are kind of adjusting their efforts, and maybe your efforts are the same and consistent with what you do, or are you just adjusting your efforts? I'm just curious about exactly if you want to mention a few projects that you're supporting now that may or may not pertain to the pandemic.
Well, one of the big ones right now is two project directors in our membership came together to form the Safety Net Fund. And they were one of the first responsive projects to the pandemic and the fact that artists were out of their gig work and out of their day jobs. And, they were really suffering right away because these folks live in the margins most of the time. So they were one of the first ones in the Bay Area out of the gate. And so far they've raised about $300,000, and they're giving out $500 grants to artists who apply. They've got 1,000 still in the queue, so we're administering all that for them. So that's there are a number of smaller ones that we're managing, but that's the big one that is having the most impact right now. So it's really artists coming together to help artists, and they've gotten contributions from like Metabolic Labs in L.A. There's a French artist who just contributed $60,000. So they're reaching out to a pretty broad network in order to bring in the support to support the artists here. So that's, that's an example of our projects working in community. We support very little that is just art for art's sake. It really is artists deeply invested in their community. They're reacting to the pressures and the challenges of their times on the macro and micro level. When we were concerned about ICE raids, one of the projects, Boom Shake Music in Oakland, they teach young women drumming, and so that they were doing drumming warnings in case ICE was coming. So they're really interesting kind of like immediate swift responses to things that are happening. And then there are others who are doing amazing work, working in the California correction system, teaching writing in Folsom and different like high security prisons, working in the Tenderloin, and artists working to help find creative ways to provide housing to the homeless. So it's really, you know, and that's another rewarding thing about the work is that they are, what they're doing is so beautiful and powerful and effective that, we're always honored to work with these artists every day.
And tell me a little bit more about just the process of working with them. I mean, maybe we can get more into certain projects, but we're talking also about fundraising, and it sounds like distributing funds. Can you tell me a little bit more just how you help with that, with facilitating that process? Is it in management, as you say, helping them manage fundraising and outreach, or is it a number of things?
Well, we like to think we take a holistic and human-centered approach to the work we do. Our biggest program is obviously fiscal sponsorship. We're the largest provider in the Bay Area for the arts. And we have a regional impact. We're in over 9 counties and serving projects as far away as Santa Cruz at this point. But we also take a look at where these project directors are in the interview process and through their application to really assess where they might need professional development and technical assistance and coaching. Because, these artists are accidental administrators. And so you have to have a whole toolkit to be able to fully realize these projects. So we really work with them on developing their capacities in various areas. One of the key ones is finance. Artists want to put their heads in the sand about finance. And because money is very emotional. And so we have to work with through the emotions of money in order for them to be able to grasp that a project budget or a profit and loss statement, that those things are effective tools because they tell a story. So we work with them to just, on basic things like how do you set up your bookkeeping and all those things, all the way through to in the fundraising component. We have a grant specialist who reviews any grant application they're developing to give feedback so that they're making the most compelling case for support. And then,
so let's talk. That's so critical. I'm sorry, but go on. So then there's grant review and support, and what were you also going to say about?
Well, hand in hand with that, going back to the finances, their budget. Because you'll frequently find there's a disconnect between what they say in the narrative and what's in their budget. So they'll say, we pay our artists a living wage. And then you look in the budget, and they're only paying their dancers $50 for 8 weeks of work. It's uniting those things, once again, to make that most compelling case for support.
So this is such a critical issue and so important that you're supporting in that way, because that was my sense of what was happening there. As you're saying, finance for artists is something that it seems almost like an oxymoron. Artists need it, but they don't also want to deal with all the applications and everything. So to talk a little bit about how you review grant applications, just to understand this a little more, do you function as a fiscal sponsor, or is it how do people get grants reviewed? That sounds like something that would be time-consuming, and so I'm interested in how that structure is set up for places like fiscal sponsorships, the Field or Fractured Atlas here in New York. There is a review process, but that comes with being a member of their organization and being fiscally sponsored.
Yeah, so our fiscal sponsees or our members, if they have developed the competency in grant writing, we waive it. But, for most of them, as they're coming up, they need to learn to write, like I said, that good grant narrative and a good budget. But we also take a look at, from the moment they're considering applying, is it a good fit? Because we stress that, in applying, first of all, it's intersection really applying as the 501c3. But
So it really is a fiscal sponsor, like Fractured Atlas, the Field, and others. Okay, right.
Yes, that's our primary support. But, frequently, they will go to some place like a foundation center or something and just type in theater, and then like 6,000 grants will come up. And they'll say, well, I'm going to apply for all of these. And we're like, no, if you look at their guidelines, they only fund in Delaware. We're in California. But you have to, we stress that, you know, if you're applying and you become a partner with that foundation, if they give you the money, the foundation has its own mission and it's trying to accomplish certain things in the world, and you become a partner with them and you're going to realize their mission through your work. And so it's really in say the grant narrative review process, are you matched up with what that funder is trying to accomplish? Are you expressing the same values that they want to express, that they want us to live by? Are you only trying to hang your hat on one thin little brad? And that's just not going to work. So really helping them vet it and make sure that it's a good fit. And once again, always that compelling case for support. Why should this foundation partner with you?
So tell me a little bit about how that works with artists. You know, I mean, I want artists to come to you if you'd like that or be supported, as opposed to Fracture Atlas or The Field. I'm sorry, I don't know more, but you also have your own, you know, distinct approach. You know, Fracture Atlas and The Field both are organizations I've worked with, and, you know, they review things in different ways to different extents. It sounds like the fit so much isn't really what they're looking at. Organizations like that are looking at is your letter in agreement with the fiscal sponsorship. They want to make sure you're you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's legally there, but not a lot of feedback in terms of does this fit the mission. So it sounds like you know, your organization differs that way. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that involves from the artist? Is there a membership fee to get these things reviewed and to see if artists are even on target? Because I think that's critical and so important, the idea of knowing, is this grant even right for me? Because, right, like you're saying, to hang it on one thin brad, you really want it to feel like to know that it's compelling and that it really fits the organization that you're applying to.
Yeah, and I have absolute respect for Fractured Atlas. You know, but I think, you know, what we emphasize, like I said, is you know, we're human-centered, and I think that can tend to get lost with some fiscal sponsors. And this kind of work with them, we don't charge them for the grant review. It's just part of their membership. Because, you know, if we teach them to fish and they bring in a good catch, we get a share of the catch. So through the administrative fees we charge. It's really about caring about them developing their competencies. You know, so this kind of work we believe is important, and that's why we supply that particular professional development tool. One of the things, though, that we really work with them on is not to become over-dependent on grants and to have a diverse revenue portfolio. Because I think that, you know, a lot of people who enter into this will get applications that say, you know, they haven't even started and they're projecting they're going to get, you know, $120,000 in grants in the first year. Well, that's just not realistic. So we have straight talk with them. But we look at the entirety of what they're doing and what are the earned income potentials and, you know, other sources of revenue, maybe from like merchandise sales, beyond ticket sales, things like that. So that they're really thinking comprehensively about what the income picture is. The ultimate goal is their sustainability and not being in the margins anymore. So, you know, an over-reliance on grants. Now, we're going to see a downturn in the amount that foundations are going to be giving, like we did back in the recession in 2008. So that's going to have huge impacts. The resilient ones and the ones that are sustainable won't have been over-reliant on that source of income.
Right, that's so interesting. So maybe I should ask you about that, because when in terms of the landscape of grants and fundraising, you know, this fiscal year, of course, many of these organizations, as I understood it, already had their funding in order. Will it be this year that grants will decrease, or will that be next year that we'll see the impact of the recession?
A lot of the foundations do it on a 3-year average. So it'll start to probably get impacted next year, as soon as next year. So, yeah, we're probably going to see a drop-off. And then you have, city government funds. So one of the major sources of support here in San Francisco is Grants for the Arts, which is based on the hotel tax. So hotel, occupancy right now is like 5%. So right. That's really going to take a hit. And it's not until things like conventions come back in that we'll see those numbers go back up.
Right, but I see also it seems that now so many organizations in New York and across the country, California, are all putting their money into, or some of their services, trying to, quote-unquote, serve artists by generating new grants that are emergency relief grants for COVID.
Yes.
Is that also, so while there may be less money in the future of all these organizations, it seems like there's almost like a glut of grant outs for grants for visual artists and performing artists. Is that the case or no?
No, I wouldn't call it a glut at all. You know, they're hamstrung in terms of their giving, and it's very hard for them to do something that is rapid response. I think that the smaller family foundations are a little more nimble, but when you get into something on the scale of Hewlett, it's harder for them to be responsive. And so, in terms of the things that are most available to the artists now, it isn't coming through the foundations. It's coming through the crowdfunding things like Safety Net Fund, like I talked about before. We've had a couple of the foundations contribute to Safety Net, and they were special board-approved grants. But for them to turn around the way they do their grant making and be responsive in a rapid way is very, very challenging for them.
Right, and to talk more about Intersection, this is for Bay Area artists, or is it for? Would you work with international artists so long as their project takes place in the Bay Area?
Yeah, the project director needs to be located in the Bay Area, although with, the changes in the ways we're being able to communicate, we may open up beyond the region and statewide. But the work of some of the projects takes place, like there's one project, Walls of Hope, that works with women in Colombia. So, it doesn't matter as long as they are based here.
And for the future, this was good to know. There'll be links in here, of course, for other artists who are in the Bay Area or essentially and want to get involved with your organization. Before I ask the last question, how do you see the future of Intersection or of the art community? I know this is a big question, but we're all in a kind of unknown now. And I hear, I've done a number of online talks with artists, roundtable talks, and I hear, two things. One is that people are of course scared, and this is a very difficult and challenging time. And I also hear from artists from all over the world that they're also, I don't know how to put this gingerly, but having an unusually productive time as well at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's both things at once in terms of the artist. Yes, there's fear in terms of, like, can I pay the rent? Can I feed my children? But artists are also incredibly resilient and able to create and make something wonderful out of basically nothing. And I think this sparks a great deal of creativity. And especially in the areas of, like, social justice and things like that, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting work coming out because, what this is exposing is, the fault lines, racial inequity, all that. I think that's I think it's going to be a flowering out of, the rubble. And where Intersection comes in is that, we I think are going to, emerge from this strengthened and more necessary, actually, service organizations like us, because organizations, a lot of them shouldn't have their own 501c3. It's too much to manage. You can stay in fiscal sponsorship forever. We can provide that critical back-end administrative support, financial accounting, bookkeeping, and they can that frees them up to be able to do their work. And we're going to need that work more than ever now.
Well, thank you so much for explaining that and doing the work that you're doing. I really admire that, and I'm so glad you're there. I wanted to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
I am reading the autobiography of Mark Twain, Volume 1, which is, you know, about a 10-pound book. He never actually got around to writing an autobiography, so it's a lot of collection of letters and speeches and his observances, you know, observations of different things. But it's a fascinating read. There are some things from his time as a journalist that are really, really compelling. Like when he talks about the ship, the Hornet, and the ship sank and they were, the crew and some passengers were at sea lost in the middle of the Pacific for like 2 months. With nothing on the horizon, and the way he writes about it is just awesome. But then his political observations would still ring true, just his social observations. You know, I find myself laughing. He's really extraordinary.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm smiling as you say it. Sounds like a wonderful read. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure. I appreciate your work and your time. Thank you so much, Randy.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.